This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's our public health show today. And today we'll be picking up on some news that came out last week after the Minister of Health, Khairi Jamaluddin, announced that organ donation pledges can now be made using the MySejahtera app, which is something that everyone living in Malaysia has after the COVID-19 pandemic. So this is an interesting development because we have had many conversations about this, where Malaysia's organ donation rate has been known to be among the lowest in the world. If my statistics are correct, only 2.84 transplant procedures per 1 million population recorded in 2021. And we do have a heavy burden of diseases that require organ transplants. So the low organ donation rate is actually very, very disappointing, considering how many lives could be saved if more people were willing to donate organs. My co-host for the public health segment, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, joining me on the show today. How are you, Azrul?
Very well, thank you, Xiaoyi. How are you?
Very well as well. And, you know, for this important topic that we're discussing today, we have two guests joining us in the studio, consultant urologist Dr. Vijay Manogran and consultant nephrologist Dr. Sunita Bhavanandan. And we'll be discussing, you know, from their various perspectives, why the need for organ donation is so important, what are the barriers, and what this new move with MySejahtera could signal, and perhaps what other initiatives or encouragements we need to consider. Your thoughts first on this topic, Azrul.
Well, you know, Xiao, you mentioned just now 2.84 transplant procedures per 1 million population in 2021. When you look at the International Registry on Organ Donation and Transplantation, it actually has ranked Malaysia as among the lowest in the world, with 0.9 donors per 1 million population. And that's quite a very low number. And it's something that we need to look at ourselves and see how we can do better, simply because there is certainly a lack of information, but also understanding of what organ donation is and what does it involve. And I think it's good that we're starting this conversation, especially taking advantage of the renewed awareness of the importance of organ donation in dealing with things like chronic kidney disease.
So I think the news just reported that since the announcement was made and the MySejahtera app was updated to allow people to do this, more than 4,000, close to 5,000 people have already registered on MySejahtera. So there is an interest there from the public. And perhaps we could look at it from the perspective of somebody who could be a potential organ donor. Dr. Sunita, who would that be? Who is a potential organ donor?
Hi, Xiaoyik. To answer that question, perhaps I'll start by trying to explain the difference between a living and a deceased donor. First of all, a living donor is where a living person gives one of the kidneys or a part of an organ, such as the liver, to be transplanted to another person. It's usually a family or close friend. But this is provided they've completed a proper evaluation and it's been found that it's safe for them to do so. So actually, a living donor is the best choice of donor because it's got better long-term outcomes. It ensures the patient has a kidney transplant much earlier than if they had to wait on the cadaveric transplant list, which now local scenario can be well over 10 years. And the outcomes are also better because the transplant's done under a controlled situation. Now, a deceased donor, on the other hand, is someone who's died and then donated their organs. And in Malaysia, the majority of our deceased donors are actually donors after brain death, which is defined as an irreversible cessation of brain function. And usually this happens after a stroke or injuries from road traffic accidents. You know, anyone could be a potential organ donor, but the state of health is really important, and we have to determine whether or not they could undergo the donation procedure safely, and also whether they are able to offer organs which are of adequate quality and also safe for a recipient.
So I'm curious, right? A state of health to be a prospective organ donor. We know that many Malaysians are actually quite unhealthy. Could we have a large pool of organ donors and later on, at the point of transplantation, discover that the organs are actually not of much use?
Right. So normally when for the living-related donors, we would have a process of a transplant workup. So at that point in time, we can sort of run through the checklist and see in the first point place whether they're suitable to proceed. But with the deceased donors, then what normally happens is when the hospital that is looking after the patient receives someone who they think might be able to be a donor, they will get in touch with the National Transplant Resource Center, and there they will run through the screening criteria as to whether we could go ahead or not.
We're speaking to you in the context of kidney transplants because chronic kidney disease presents the highest burden in terms of organ donation needs, and I'm sure you can give a bit more background on that as well, the burden of chronic kidney disease. And then why do we look at organ transplant as the treatment of choice? Because many people think immediately of dialysis instead of organ transplants. Perhaps you'd like to shed some light there.
Okay. Well, chronic kidney disease is sort of an under-recognized problem for public health. And actually, it's a lot more common than people imagine. When we did a survey in way back in 2011, the prevalence of chronic kidney disease in the adult Malaysian population was 9.7%. And when that survey was repeated in 2017-2018, it's gone up to 15.5%. Which means one in seven adults actually has chronic kidney disease. And without proper care and management, many of these patients will progress to end-stage kidney disease. And we have statistics from the Malaysian Dialysis and Transplant Registry. So we've used those statistics to kind of predict or look at the trends. And we can see that year after year, there's an increasing prevalence of patients requiring dialysis or the new dialysis patients. And the last, you know, when we looked at these statistics, it was about 8,000 to 9,000 new patients per year requiring dialysis or
That's
transplant.
A lot.
Yeah.
So then the comparing between dialysis and organ transplants?
Okay. For the majority of patients, a kidney transplant will be the best choice of therapy if you reach end-stage kidney failure. And that's because kidney transplants can actually improve patient survival, meaning it helps patients with kidney failure to live longer as compared to if they stay on dialysis. And in some instances, the transplant can actually be life-saving if, for example, they've run out of transplant dialysis access. And a kidney transplant also actually improves the patient's quality of life because they're free from the dialysis routine. They feel much stronger and more energetic, and they don't need as much dietary restrictions as if they stay on dialysis. From a healthcare payer's perspective, it's also kidney transplant would be by far the best choice compared to long-term dialysis because we've got studies from many countries, including in Malaysia, showing that transplant is either more cost-effective or offers more favourable cost utility than dialysis, particularly from the second year post-transplant where the cost of transplant care goes down. So if we look at the long run, when we know that the numbers of patients on end-stage kidney disease are rising, we can see that it's just not going to be sustainable to try to dialyze everybody, and kidney transplant should be therefore the first choice for those who are suitable.
Dr. Bijoyan, Dr. Sinita has highlighted several times that in terms of organ transplant being a solution or at least an effective form of treatment for end-stage kidney disease. But when you look at the statistics from the Malaysian kidney allocation system, MICAS, you know, and you see there 10,300 ESKD patients who are waiting for kidney transplant operations. And the reality for Malaysia is that we only have around, I think, 20 to 40 kidney transplants involving deceased donors annually. So when you look at also in terms of the cadaveric organ donation ratio versus living donors, it's 1 to 3. So for every one deceased, there are 3 living donors. So it's a very long waiting list, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about thousands of patients needing organ transplant, and therefore their outcomes are deteriorating basically by the day.
Correct.
What can you describe in terms of how a person is facing when it comes to this kind of situation?
So Malaysia, unfortunately, is not a stranger to doing renal transplants in patients who have a long vintage of dialysis. In fact, if you go to other countries, most patients actually have their transplant done within a year or two of being on dialysis. But Malaysia, if you look at what we have been doing patients on doing transplants for patients on dialysis for after 10, 15 years. You know, of course, the outcomes are not as great. You know, and some patients die waiting on the list. You see, that's the sad part of it. You know, and the issue, as you rightly pointed out, Azrul, is the fact that we do not have the donors. You know, we have one of the highest rates of road traffic accidents in the world. Yet, our brain death testing is so limited. It's so few that we are missing on all this potential organ donors, you see. So that is one big area where there is a ready pool, but there's so many encumbrances for us to actually utilize these organs if they are actually successfully converted to be an organ donor.
We'll come back and discuss more about these encumbrances that you mentioned, Dr. Vijayan, the barriers to ensuring a higher rate of organ donation in Malaysia. It's our public health segment today with my co-host Azrul Mohamad Khalib from the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. We're discussing organ donation together with our guests, consultant nephrologist Dr. Sunita Bhavanandan and Dr. Vijayan Manogran, consultant urologist. This is following news that MySejahtera now includes a function for you to pledge to donate your organs. We'll be right back on Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. It's our public health show today with my co-host, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. We're speaking to consultant nephrologist, Dr. Sunita Bhavanandan, and consultant urologist, Dr. Vijayan Manogran, today about organ donation. We've discussed the heavy burden of diseases, primarily chronic kidney disease, the high rate of it in Malaysia presents a heavy burden, that organ transplants would be a good avenue to help patients, save patients' lives and save on healthcare costs as well, as we know that dialysis is very, very expensive. Dr. Sunita already quoted the staggering sum of 8,000 to 9,000 new chronic kidney patients requiring dialysis every single year. But unfortunately, our rate of organ donation, whether it's living donors or deceased donors, is very low. We're discussing some of the societal or cultural attitudes surrounding the concept of donating your organs. And Dr. Vijayan, earlier you brought up encumbrances to enabling a larger pool of organ donors. Now, are the barriers very much due to cultural perceptions and attitudes about donating our organs, or are there other logistical barriers as well?
Okay, there are actually quite a bit. There are many who have pledged, and this is something that is kind of sad. When you do pledge, a lot of times in Malaysia, the family members have a final say, you see. So most of the time we're lucky, yes, an organ pledger will eventually get their organs, to be utilized. But many a times, the family members are not aware of it. And this leads to a lot of problems, especially at that point in time when the loved one is declared brain dead. You go and discuss it with them at that point in time. It's like a shock to them. They cannot accept it, even if they want to. But, you'll have so many family members around at the point and say, no, you can't, So we have missed out on many. In this instance, that is one issue. And of course, now, knowledge is empowerment. If you are knowledgeable enough about the effect of organ donation, how it can help people, then yes, our healthcare education, our education at the schools, it's not there. People spoke about it many years ago about Ministry of Education introducing this early on, whether in the primary school or secondary school. There was talk about it, maybe some this one, but after that, nothing, So people need to be educated about this from the early stages itself. Then you can at least lead a discussion about it, and it can be brought forward back to the family. Today we discussed about this. What do you think?
Well, Dr. Vijayan and Dr. Sneha, that brings me to the point concerning the Human Tissues Act of 1974. I mean, if I refer back to that piece of legislation, it states very clearly that a transplant procedure can only be lawfully pursued if the donor authorizes the removal of specific body parts, either in writing or verbally, in the presence of two or more witnesses. But the law also indicates that there's a family veto. I think it's what you're referring to, yeah?
Correct.
By the surviving spouse or next of kin, where these individuals have the right to object and overrule the deceased's wishes, which then immediately terminates the donation process. So we have that situation you are basically referring to, which is in effect affecting the way that the donation process is ongoing in Malaysia. So it's not just about the donor's consent, but it's also basically the wider family members.
Correct.
So how can we deal with that?
Yeah. And have either of you been in that situation as the physician who needs to both counsel family members on their grief as well as broach this issue?
Okay. We don't.
No.
Because there will be conflict of interest in that sense. So we do not get involved. So this, a lot of this happens in the ICU setting where the intensivists, the anesthetists who are taking care and the doctors from the primary team, whichever the primary team are, these are the issues that they face along with the transplant coordinators, the organ procurement teams who are actually tasked to sort of like look out for this potential donors. But to say that, you know, many years ago, it was actually quite bad. Only in recent times, there has been some improvement in the last few years. There have been some improvement. Not fantastic, but it seems that we are moving a little bit in the right direction. Maybe one step or two steps, baby steps, I would say.
And, you know, when I registered on my Sejahtera recently, the first thing you see is that that sort of a statement or note, right, that you have to inform your family members that you are doing this and ensure that they are aware of it, which is, of course, I think should be a given. It's baseline. But do you think it needs to go beyond that? As Azrul had asked, what can we do to bring in family members into this consent process?
If you ask me, this decision to be made by the individual must involve the family. You must, whether if you decide that you want to sign up, after you do so, please sit down and tell the family members, in the unlikely event of my demise, these are my wishes, you know. But you see, in the Western countries, this is a common practice. In our Asian country, you know, it's talking
taboo.
Talking about death is taboo, you see. So this mindset is one issue that, you know, I don't know how long that will take. But my Sejahtera may be the initial stepping stone forward, making it accessible for everyone to pledge.
Dr. Sunita, any thoughts?
Yeah, we really need to do a much wider sort of education of the public, of patients and their families, and also of healthcare professionals, because quite often the concept of what is brain death is really not understood properly. And there's a lot of, you know, kind of like misunderstanding and misinformation out there that makes people very wary about becoming donor pledgers. So I think this is one of the things that we need to do as phased sort of education of the public, and as I mentioned, healthcare professionals themselves.
You know, when I look at the My Sejahtera option now, where you can pledge to be an organ donor, I noticed a number of startling things, one of which, it does not even ask whether you consent to being an organ donor. You yourself. It asks the warrants, it asks for the next of kin, it asks for the contact details, but your own consent is not asked, which is very strange. And in contradiction to, I'm looking at the 2009 version of the organ donor card, which is the physical card, yeah?
The green card.
The green card that was issued, which states clearly, first of all, you consent, and also, what do you consent to donate? Yes. In the My Sejahtera application, there is no such option. So essentially, in that option in My Sejahtera, the application asks everybody else's basically agreement except for your own, which is quite ironic, I would say. So it's a stark comparison to where we see in other countries where the right of the individual is very important to respect in terms of the wishes to become an organ donor. But here it seems maybe it's Asia, you know, you have to ask everybody else whether or not it's all right before. But let me ask you a provocative question here, two of you doctors. Countries like Netherlands, Belgium, and Spain have adopted an opt-out strategy when it comes to organ donation. So essentially, everybody is a donor unless you opt out of being an organ donor. So what do you think of this approach instead, which could actually address those problems that Dr. Vijayan highlighted earlier?
So this opt-out system actually is still something that's a subject of much debate. And actually, there have been some papers recently which suggest that, contrary to what we expect, we find that actually there's no difference between in those countries that pledge to be use the opt-out system and those who don't and use an opt-in system. There's actually been no significant difference in the number of deceased donations. And in fact, the number of living donations go down. And if you were someone who valued autonomy, then I think that it would sort of go very much against the grain to say that, you know, an outside authority would have say over what happens to your body after your death. But Azrul, just following up about the point about the Mysajatra, prior to this session today, I did actually contact the Derma Organ, which is run by the National Transplant Resource Centre, because I asked them exactly the same questions which you said. Looking at the Mysajatra app, it's not very much information there, so how will we know? And they told me that apparently there will be plans to kind of link the Mysajatra app to National Transplant Resource Centre, which is actually where they issue the organ donor cards. So perhaps then they will ask and get the information about which tissues and organs do you agree to. Yeah.
Well, it's good to know that they are thinking about that. Thank you.
Actually, on that note, it might be good to get a brief sense of, because we talked about kidneys and we sort of jumped ahead, and that's because chronic kidney disease, as I said, presents the biggest burden. But organ donation, or rather organ transplants, are sometimes the only mode of treatment for certain other diseases. Dr. Vijayan, maybe you could just, I know you're a urologist, not a cardiologist, perhaps if we're talking about heart and things like that. But when we're talking about, organ transplants or even tissue transplants, what is the bigger picture here?
Well, okay, so in the sense from a urology or from nephrology point of view, we are rather lucky because we have a fallback option, which many people do take, dialysis, as you mentioned earlier. Now, other organs do not have that. Things like liver, lung, and heart. Liver is definitely no-no. The moment you have acute liver failure, you need an urgent liver transplant. And I'm happy to say that recently the liver transplants have been picking up in numbers, which is very good. But heart and lung has been in the doldrums for the last few years, you know. And this is a stark contrast. Heart is life-saving. There's no other way, you know. Of course, people will say, oh yeah, now you have this temporary machines, you can be on it for a few months to a year while you wait. But that is in a situation where you have heart donors relatively readily available. But otherwise, it's just, you know, delaying the inevitable. Similar with the lungs also. So these are the organs that you really, really need donors immediately. You know, you can't dilly-dally around.
It's literally a life and death situation.
Yes, it is.
Mm. What about tissue transplants?
Okay, tissue transplants are not too bad. Cornea transplants is a great example, and they are doing fantastic numbers, you know. So cornea transplant, these are, in terms of quality of life, you know, you get your better vision and all these things. So these are things that are ongoing. Bone transplants, not common, but yes, there are. But these are important parts of the transplant. But we don't, it's not like life-saving per se, in compared to all the others, the solid organs you're talking about. Mm. Yeah.
How often is it, Dr. Vijayan, that families are faced with a decision that is actually posed by a surgeon that has operated or has treated their daughter or son, and it becomes very apparent that that person has suffered brain death, and therefore the option then becomes whether or not to donate the person's organs so that it can help other people. How often is that in Malaysian hospitals for people to consider to do?
Okay, very good question, and it goes back to what Dr. Sunita said. You see, educating the healthcare professionals, I don't see it, but certain specialties such as neurosurgery, okay, because of the head trauma, head injuries. They see this a lot out with our motor vehicle accidents, as I mentioned earlier. And the thing is, the idea of identifying these patients whom they have operated on, you know, with the anaesthetists who are taking care of the patients in the ICU, you identify them and say, look, we have done our best, you know, but looks like that there is no improvement. They look like they are brain dead, you know. And of course, they have to sit together and discuss with the family members. And this is something, it's time consuming, you know, as what Dr. Sunita mentioned earlier, you need to be aware that these are the criteria for brain dead. Once you know, and then you can identify, then only you can approach. But a lot of times, one, the volume of work that these people face, they just, you know, they're overburdened trying to sit down and talk to the family members. That itself is taking up a lot of their resources. So we miss that opportunity, like I said, you know?
But it's also a burden on the families also, that needing to make the decision. I mean, it's quite a lot to handle all at one go, and suddenly being asked, you know, whether you want to donate organs from their loved one to other people. So let me ask Dr. Sunita, I mean, are there any difficult ethical problems faced when those kinds of moments or decisions are having to be made?
I guess the typical scenario we see is that the family members are divided in opinion. Quite often, perhaps the younger members are more inclined to agree to the donation, but you'll get an older family member who steps in at the last minute and says no. And this is what I mean about trying to get public educated to understand the concepts of brain death and the fact that, and to have trust in the medical system that, you know, some people are worried that if they have become an organ pledger, if they were to end up in ICU, perhaps people might not go all out to save them, or even there's this fear that people will declare them dead when they're not really dead. So this is why people have to understand that to declare somebody brain dead, we actually have to go through very strict criteria, and the process is done by senior doctors, at least two of them, and both have got nothing to do with transplantation. And these two senior doctors do the test normally, and they also have to repeat the test at least 6 hours apart before we can actually declare anybody brain dead. So, you know, I think we really have to get the public to understand and to put away all these fears that we're going to actually sort of...
snatch the organs. That's right. Yeah, we are not organ snatchers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or grave robbers. And I think what you had pointed out about the doctors who are determining that, making that decision, are completely independent and are not specialists like yourself who have a conflict of interest there. So the doctors making the decision and signing that off have no other interest except just looking at where that patient is.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up some of the misconceptions or the beliefs that people have that, you know, the decision to declare brain death may be rushed, that people are waiting to, you know, and you can't blame people, I suppose, for having these fears. But what are some others that you'd like to clarify now that we have the space to do so, whether cultural or religious beliefs even?
Okay, I think the religious beliefs has been visited many, many times. But even till now, there is a large reluctance. And looking at the religious council, whether you are a Muslim, you are a Christian, you are a Hindu, you are a Buddhist, all the religious leaders of their respective faiths have come out. I mean, the easiest examples would be the Muftis who have come out and said there are so many edicts that have already said, it is good, it is recommended, it is you are advised to do so, to donate the organs in the event of your death. But still, I won't blame religion per se. I believe a lot of this is in the cultural context. You know, they are from their own family beliefs, their own background, you know, their own upbringing, you know. And despite whatever the fatwas that have come out or whatever, you know, the religious leaders have told that is good, but their culture, personal cultural beliefs overrule these, you know, and cloud their minds and say, look, you know, no, we are not. You know, I come as whole, I go back to my maker as whole. I cannot go back without parts from my body missing. These are common issues that people actually have highlighted. I mean, after our Honourable Minister of Health announced, you know, that My Sejahtera will be used, that organ donation and all that, you should see the comments that came out on Facebook when he shared it out.
Really?
It was quite an eye-opener to realise that people had this misconception.
Yeah, and I really have to agree with you, Dr. Vijayan. You know, when you look at how much work has been done with Jakim to sort of help increase the acceptance of Muslims for organ donation, it's been quite substantial, thinking that that is perhaps where a lot of resistance lie. And I have to refer to this 2020 study that was done by Dr. Farida Islahuddin from University Kebangsaan Malaysia. And she and her colleagues did a study to look at perception and attitudes concerning organ donation. And if you look at the ethnic group in terms of the breakdown, we find that the largest number of kidney donors, and this is specific for kidney donation, is amongst Indians, which is around 73%, the Chinese, 62%, and other ethnic groups around 33%. And when you look at the Malay community, it's around 11%. So I totally would agree with you that we are looking at, you know, cultural, perhaps even family attitudes towards organ donation more than religion, because whatever has been done, the fatwa, the arguments concerning organ donation for Muslims, it already has been done for quite a number of years now. But yes, the rates continue to be low amongst Malay Muslims, and it's quite disappointing, especially when you consider that the most in need arguably come from this community.
On the other side, are there any challenges with convincing patients to receive a donated organ, Dr. Sunita?
Yes, sometimes there are. For example, for living-related donations, I think that patients often worry that their loved ones who are going to be the donors may eventually run into trouble themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you know, something goes wrong, then they would feel very guilty about it. But that's why it's important to reassure the both the potential recipient and the donors, that we would sort of go through a very thorough workup of these potential donors to make sure that, you know, the risk is really, really minimal and they won't run into problems in the long run.
Yeah, you're not just going to cut it out of somebody and pass it over. The process is very rigorous, isn't it?
That's right. Our paramount concern is actually the safety and the well-being of the donor.
Yes.
Right.
So I wanted to bring up at this point, Dr. Sunita, about cost. Mm-hmm. I don't think we talk about it enough. And I, in my course of looking up, and my own colleague wrote an article a while back, and I found that if you were to do this procedure for transplant, it's heavily subsidized under the Ministry of Health hospitals. I think we find that transplant recipients pay only 1,000 ringgit for the entire procedure, and they get the immunosuppressant medications for free, and the donors don't have to pay anything at all and receive free medical care at MOH hospitals for the rest of their life. And if you look at what Ministry of Education hospitals are charging, it's around 50 to 60,000, and it's even a lot more in the private sector for transplant procedures. So essentially, if you look at costs, if you go through the government healthcare facilities, it's basically 1,000 ringgit, which is very, very, very much subsidized and definitely affordable, accessible to most people, considering the life improvement benefits that you can obtain there. So your opinion, based on the patients that you've seen, does cost come into consideration when it comes to organ donation?
Sorry, just to understand your question, I don't think for patients that there would be any financial restriction to coming to a government hospital to go through the transplant with us. I do realise that sometimes because of the longer time it takes to get worked out, and for those patients who can afford it, they do go to private hospitals, of which there are a few in this country, and they do their transplants there. But, you know, subsequently, if it's a living-related transplant, then some of them will encounter difficulty with the long-term costs of the medications. And that's something that they need to think about carefully.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you said, Azrul, is absolutely right. the government set up in, under MOH, I mean, it's fully subsidized. You're talking about ringgit for a pair of living-related renal transplant surgery to be done. You will never get this anywhere else. You won't, you know. What you said about the university hospitals, yeah, the figure is about right. I won't even go towards the private hospitals because, yeah, it's almost double that. But coming to a government hospital, the issue, there are many things. There are many issues. Most of the patients who are on dialysis are under the care of nephrologists within Ministry of Health. There's another group who are under private centres also. But trying to get access, your names get put up. If you have a pair, fantastic. If you have a donor, you know, fantastic. But the workup, as what Dr. Sunita said, for a government hospital does take time. You know, if everybody wants to get worked up in the two Malaysian, the two Ministry of Health hospitals that do renal transplants at the moment is Hospital Kuala Lumpur and also Hospital Selayang. Now, if you want all the workup to be done in either these two hospitals, you're going to, you know, the waiting list will just be forever. So what we have done is we have asked the other hospitals, whichever state they are from, to do the workup. Now, some get their workup done early, some get it done late. Some of the workups cannot be done. There are a lot of logistic issues there. So this is the problem, and there is that slight waiting time. But
sorry, doctor, could you explain what you mean by workup?
Okay, so for the living pair, the living donor, you know, there are scans to be done, there are echocardiography to be done, cardiac assessments to be done, a lot of things. There's a lot of workup because we must make sure that both the donor of paramount importance and the recipient are fit to go for the surgery. You see, as what Dr. Sunita rightly mentioned, the donor safety comes first. You see, so if you have a donor, yes, good, well, but there is a process to it. If you get it done in private, it's much, much faster because everything is done immediately. You just have to pay the money. But in the government side, there is a waiting list. You know, you just can't get getting an echocardiogram, you know, or I want it now. It doesn't work like that, you see.
So basically, you can pay to get your organ faster.
If you're talking about in the private sector, yeah. Why not?
If you have a donor, yes.
Yes.
And what you're paying for is the speed at which the workup can be done. It's not like you're paying to be put in front of the at the front of the waiting list,
no.
But it's just the sheer fact that all those tests,
in
the private sector, they have the resources to do it much faster.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
leads me to another question: does the private sector have its own list of organ donors, and the public sector have its own list, or is there just one big list?
Okay. In Malaysia, actually, since way back, actually 1996, we've sort of had a national cadaveric kidney transplant waiting list, but things have evolved over the years. When we first started out, this national cadaveric kidney waiting list was just for Ministry of Health patients. But in 1999, then the Malaysian Organ Sharing System, which we call the MOS, was developed, and that includes all patients on dialysis, whether in the public, private, or NGO sectors. And this system is actually under the purview of a professional society, and that is the Malaysian Society of Nephrology, but it's actually supported by the Ministry of Health. And the system's gone digital since 2019. It's called EMOS. And then recently, we've gone on to what we call My Kidney Allocation System. And that allows us to actually ensure that everything's done in a very fair, transparent, and equitable manner. So any deceased organ that comes in will be shared among the hospitals.
At the moment, deceased organs transplants, renal transplants are only done mainly in Ministry of Health hospitals plus University of Malaya Medical Centre. Private centres at the moment do not do deceased organ transplants.
And so you mentioned about MyCAS just now, the Malaysian Kidney Allocation System. Is that just, well, as its name suggests, it's only for kidney. How about the other organs as well? Is there a separate system?
Which seems a bit unwieldy, isn't it?
Well, I think there is a move by the Malaysian Society of Transplantation to try to get all this under Ministry of Health to have one master list. But there are issues with it. It's being worked on at the moment, because the time tested is the kidney allocation system. You started off with the EMOS and whatnot. Yeah. So I think it's moving towards that, but trying to get all the pieces, you know, put into a jigsaw puzzle, it's taking a little bit of time. They are working on it.
Yeah, I think we sort of have to probably consider having a sort of foundation to get this system that works for all organs.
Yeah.
But the role of the Transplant Resource Centre then?
Okay, you're talking about NTRC, the National Transplant Resource Centre. They actually look at promoting awareness about transplantation,
mm-hmm.
To be organ donors, looking at how activities to improve organ transplant, organ donation rates. These are, and they are also in charge of looking out for potential donors. They have teams in various states, various major nucleus hospitals or states to identify potential donors. This is their main core of their job.
All right. So I guess I want to wrap up by coming back to the news item that sparked this conversation, the use of the MySajatra app. Where do you see us going from here? Is this app, as you said, going to be a good way to sort of kickstart everyone to, you know, at least have that conversation with, you know, internally within themselves first and with their family members? How does it need to extend from here as well, Dr. Sunita?
I think it's a positive first step of one of many steps that needs to be taken to increase public awareness and improve the education about organ donation. Mm-hmm. It really does have to be followed up with a lot more other initiatives as well to support it and build it up. Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts what some of the other initiatives should look like?
One of the things that we tend to sort of do is focus very much on people who are perhaps a bit more digitally knowledgeable. Things like these apps, I think, only probably reach a limited audience. So I think this education of the public and all that needs to take many other channels as well. Perhaps for the older population, the radio, using other forms of media, newspapers, etc., would be useful, and TV as well. And perhaps roadshows should be done so that we can actually reach a much wider sort of range, a target audience.
Mm. Dr. Vijayan, your thoughts?
I agree with what Dr. Sunita said, in the sense that in the current digital age, and everybody has more or less a smartphone, MySajatra is easy to use. I mean, you have to, like what Azrul mentioned, I think you have to identify there are weaknesses, you have to correct it, utilize the app, it is easily accessible, and it's, like you said, the first platform for people to have an insight, a thought about it, you know. And now, using other sources of media, radio, even the cinemas, I mean, I think you can utilize that 5 minutes before the, movie start, you know, have a short song on organ transplantation. That is one area where you can get the attention of people. Why can't we use that? Get a community CSR kind of this one from GSC or TGV or something like that, you know?
Okay, I hope they're listening.
You know, why not? You know?
What about schools? You mentioned schools earlier.
Yeah, so again, see, this is a multi-pronged approach. This is a national need, a key performance indicator, I would say, you know, to bring transplantation rates up. How would you do this? Okay? This is an easily available thing to teach about how you can help somebody at the end of your life if you need to, or even living donation for that matter. No harm comes to you if it's done right. What is wrong with that?
If we don't do anything, Dr. Vijayan, Dr. Sunita, if we don't do anything, we continue down this road 20, 30, 40, 50 years, what's it going to look like?
I think we're going to look at difficulties in sustaining the treatment of patients with end-stage kidney disease, because unless and until we actually increase the organ donation rates, then every year they will be accumulating. And we see that from our registry. We can see that, for example, in the year 2020, we've already got about 49,000 plus patients. And a previous study to model this has shown that by the year 2040, we'll have 106,000 patients unless we take concrete steps right now to do something to change that trend.
106,000.
I don't want to sound alarmist, but Malaysia has one of the highest rates of obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes. And all this contribute to renal failure. And look at the numbers as what Dr. Sunita is quoting. We can't sustain this. At the end of the day, the healthcare cannot maintain this at all. You know, and if you start putting in money into just dialysis alone, all your other healthcare requirements are going to suffer.
Mm. Azrul, any final thoughts?
You know, Shawit, I didn't realize the projection was that bad. 106,000 is certainly beyond anything I've heard. And it's certainly a realistic projection. In fact, perhaps even underestimated when we think about it a little bit more. And one of the problems that has been identified, which both doctors have emphasized again and again, is the need for education. And even though we target younger people who are more agreeable, susceptible, and most importantly, supportive of the idea of organ donation, I can't help but feel that the problem really lies in the older group of people who may be resistant to the idea of their loved ones being, whose organs are being donated to others. And perhaps we need to increase the level of engagement and outreach with this group of people as well. Though I must say, having PSAs in cinemas just before the cinema starts could just cause people to leave the cinema earlier. I don't know. But certainly that's a great idea, and certainly we should be able to think out of the box when it comes to this issue. But
no, like, people have paid the money of that ticket. They will still stay for the movie. Yeah, we've just left them with a different thought. Yeah.
But you know, Shawi, I think that goes back to the heart of this issue, and I think which My Sujathra is trying to deal with as well, which is that if you are an organ donor, make sure everybody around you and your own family knows that you're an organ donor, so that if anything happens, they can respect your wishes on that last final moment, you know, that you can contribute and help save other people's lives as well. And that's something that perhaps we don't do enough. And I just want to put it on record here. You know, I'm an organ donor. If anything happens to me, everything must go, you know. So essentially, this is what we need to be able to tell other people as well if we are organ donors. Make sure everybody knows our intent and ensure that the niyat is able to be fulfilled if anything happens to us.
Yeah, so I think, you know, for all of you listening, first thing, just check out that function on your My Sujathra app. And then have that conversation with your loved ones. Show them the process, the questionnaire. Even if it starts a conversation that you're not used to having, at least you're starting that conversation. Thank you so much to our guests for joining us today, Dr. Vijaya Manogran, consultant urologist, and Dr. Sunita Bhavanandan, consultant nephrologist, and of course my co-host, Azrul Mohamad Khalid from the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.